Welcome to Two's Talk with Tosh, Dino, and Donnie.
Dino, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Donnie. Good to be here.
Dino, we have you on video chat, and I noticed you got your uniform on. You must have somewhere to go pretty quick here, bud.
I have a big game tonight.
They're all big games. They're all big games.
Got a big game tonight, 6:45 down at Kaplan Field. Hope to see you all there.
Awesome. And Keith, how are you, bud?
I'm good, Donnie. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for asking.
Hey, if that game starts at 6:45, you better be there by 6:48 if you want to see Dino pitch.
Thanks.
Could be an early exit. I expect to see Dino doing some warm-ups here on the video chat. I'll let you guys know how that goes. Today, we're actually really lucky to have a couple guys, former NHLers, a couple fairly tough guys, I guess you might call them, who have played a couple sports and have unbelievable stories to share with us. So we got Kelly Chase and Kevin Kaminsky. Welcome, fellas.
Hey, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, it's a pleasure, boys. Well, I want to jump right into it, obviously. I mean, the connection, obviously, you guys have small-town Saskatchewan guys. We're all small-town Saskatchewan guys. But there was a TSN feature at Dunn on the toughest team that ever was, the Hawkeyes. You guys want to get into that a little bit first?
Chaser, go ahead.
Killer. Well, yeah, we were lucky. We were, you know, we grew up in a place, you know, that just like all of us, that, you know, it was kind of like summers were for ball, winters for hockey. And we had a lot of guys in our hometown that, you know, in the area that played hockey, and we kind of grew up together. And we were fortunate enough to be able to put a team together. I never thought much about it, but if you think about it now with the group that we had, you know, they said in the show, which was actually kind of a direct quote about our hockey team with the Blades, because there was a lot of us playing there, it was more of a work release program than it was a hockey team or a baseball team. It was just sort of like, you know, we had a tough group, but we never thought much about it. And if you think nowadays, if the Edmonton Oilers were to hear that Connor McDavid was, because Wendell was the first pick overall, if he was playing hockey or baseball in the summertime, they would can the kid for doing it. So it was just the times. We were just fortunate enough to have a great group of guys that liked one another, that hung together and were able to place, and, you know, and were good athletes. So we just all kind of did what we did in the summertime, and we were competitive. As you guys know, we all have that about us that we want to win, and I think that's what made us a little bit unique.
Unique, absolutely. Yeah, unique's a nice way to put it, for sure. I don't know if you ever find a collection. Let's just run through the list real quick. You had Kelly Chase, Kaminsky. You had Wendell Clark with four other Clarks. You had two Koshers. You had two Melroses and Trent Yawney on this team. So how were the pickup hockey games, I suppose? Like, I imagine, like, that's a pretty good group that I imagine played together in every sport all the way up, I suppose.
Yeah, it was like that. I think the one thing, I mean, Killer, I'll tell you, too, he came from a real competitive baseball town. But I think when you get a group of guys that play together on the ice and were good teammates and always cared for one another, it adds a little bit to it. Melrose will, you know, kind of kept us in line a little bit, and we always went back and worked at his hockey school. But the first thing we did in the evening, if we weren't water skiing, was grab a ball glove and get balls. So a lot of fun.
Barry Melrose kept all you guys in line. That's not at all what I would have pictured with the group of guys in that Barry Melrose was the leader. But it does bring up an interesting, out of that TSN featurette, which Barry Melrose ran over a catcher in a game. And, of course, the other team isn't going to like that. And the bench is cleared. Do you want to get into that story, Kelly? I heard you had a front row seat.
Well, actually, I want to tell you, I had a front row seat, but I'm not sure that you've narrowed it down to which time it happened, because you're talking about a brawl we had. And I mean, I don't even know what the hell you're talking about. We've been in so many of them things where it happened. I remember one time they had a big fight in Tisdale where Barry got run over. And the first thing that happened was that Neil Clark told me to sit down as I ran in from second base. He goes, "What are you going to do when you get in there?" And I'm like, I don't know. We got a couple Clarks, a couple Koshers, and everybody's fighting in there. And there was no sense of him and I leaving the outfield. So we just went and sat on second base. I remember Killer running over a guy one time and starting a brawl. I go, so I don't know. I mean, it could have happened a lot of times, you guys. And I just want to say this. You talked about Melrose holding on to us, and Dino, you were a part of this. Do you remember in Medicine Hat when we had that brawl and they put out?
Oh, geez.
You, me, Twist, Clark, Kosher. I think in the game it was 8-0. We got pounded in the game.
Yeah.
No, it was one of our. You know, I think we ended up running the riverbanks of Saskatoon for something like a week straight after that game or whatever. But I remember Melrose saying, I've grown up around these guys. None of them were out there to tie the game up. And there was like a minute and a half left. We were down 6 or 8-0. So, I mean, he had a pretty good handle on what we were doing and what the type of players we were. And I'm sure that he wished that there was about 7 of us off that team that were on his team still. And that, even though they won the Memorial Cup, beat us. That was a whole nother story. So that was a tough time.
I can't remember if it was the same game or if it was the series or who knows if it's melding into another year, but I remember the brawl that broke out in the stands and then kind of all the players on the ice were watching what was going on in Medicine Hat. Do you remember that one?
Wasn't that killer written all over it too?
I don't think he was actually in it, but I think there was just almost about a 2 or 3 minute delay where all the players are just looking up into the stands behind the goalie and there's just people throwing them. Yeah, it was a
gutter.
Yeah, they
had that siren they used to dip down into the bench and put it on what we called timeout or something. And I think that's how it all got going.
Exactly.
That's what that was.
Wow. Wow. Well,
you know, go ahead, Donnie.
No, I was just going to, I wanted to, I mean, we could, I bet there's 5 hours of the content talking about these kinds of things, which is great. And we'll get into more of that for sure. I guess for you, Kevin, your nickname, which is Killer, which I don't imagine you get easily. Is there a backstory behind how you got that nickname? Or is it just in the fact that you have 10,000 penalty minutes? Is there something else?
Well, I don't. I think Chaser has a version, and then I don't know. I think the version that I had was we were playing AAA Midget Blazers in Saskatoon here, and you know, throughout my career, it was only a short career up, and I think it was 15 years old. I was always told to take the body because there was hitting back then, and there was a race for the puck. Got dumped out, and the goalie came out and was going to play it, and I was hoping to beat him to get to it so I could, you know, go around him and score a goal, but he got there just before I did, so split reaction. I freaking...
Such a bunch of bullshit.
I took the body, and there was a yard sale, blocker, glove, stick, helmet everywhere, and I think the goalie was knocked out, and I think that's how I got the nickname Killer.
Well, there's two of us on here that played on that team with you, and I'm not sure that's where it came from myself. it could have come from the night we brawled Humboldt at the old downtown arena, and you had two Humboldt guys pinned up against the glass, feeding them both. It might have come from there too.
Yeah, but you know what he did? He took his jersey off. I got kicked out of the game for first man on the bench or off the bench, and I was not the first man off the bench.
No.
I think David Bell could have been the first guy off the bench. Remember that?
We've all seen you skate. We know you were.
Wow, that's early. Early in the telecast.
Wow.
Killer's smarter than Dino. Killer's smarter than Dino, then. That's what you're saying right here.
Okay, so...
I'll tell you what, that was a crazy brawl, man. I mean... Shit, I think I fought 4 times, and I tell you what, when I come back home from the hospital, I had bandages going one way around my face and then around the chin and my other top of my head. I was cut open everywhere, and oh my gosh.
Hey, where are you at for stitches? What was your total?
You know what? I was at... 651 stitches. I was at
640. That's just on the head, right?
Yeah. I was at 647, and then I took a stick in Youngstown, Ohio, when I was coaching. So I broke the 650 mark at 651 with 4 stitches.
Oh, wow.
Good mark.
Hey, so just, how many stitches are on an average 12-inch softball? 100?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, think about that. Just assume 100 for easy numbers. He has as many stitches in him as seven
six
of those.
Softballs.
Yeah. So a whole game's worth of balls that you have in you. That's a record, I suppose. So Chaser, do you have another version of how that nickname came about? I'd like to hear from both of you. I mean, I know you said you had a different.
Chaser, Mike.
No, I don't. You know, because when you came up to play with us, I remember when you fought. Brian Glynn, who we love, right? Glinner was such a good guy, fun, and a great teammate. And he actually tuned in Kenny Baumgartner, and then Baumgartner was one of those guys that wasn't going to go away either. It was best of seven with him too. So he comes over to the bench and he's yelling and he's blinking and twitching and telling everybody that. You know, he's going to threaten everyone in their family and everything. And we're all kind of barking, except Glinner. Glinner's looking for quarters. He's had enough. He could, and Bomber's saying, number two, hey, two, where's two? Where's two? I want two. I'm not done with you, two. And Glinner is like, oh, my God. Like, and Killer pops his head up, and he starts chirping away. And then the next thing you know, Killer goes out on the ice after Ken Baumgartner.
I remember that.
And I just leaned over and I said, no, he is a killer. He's a killer. Like, I just started laughing. I said, I don't know where we found. I mean, because he had these little round spectacle glasses, and he gets on the bus, and I'm hearing about how tough this kid is, and I look at him, and I'm thinking, I mean, I could hold him by the ankles out the window right now. And on the way to PA, we get in there, and it's in Prince Albert, and he just goes after this guy. I'm like, oh, my God, where did we find this kid?
I suppose Killer's a nickname that you don't just get one day. You probably earn it over and over again, I assume. It didn't happen after one event. You know, so Manson and Baumgartner both played in PA, right?
Yes, correct.
Because I did hear a story, I don't know if it's folklore, maybe you guys can confirm, but I heard that sometimes in PA they would take the opposing team's net out of warm-ups and bring it down to their end, and no one had the balls to go down there and get it back. Is that true?
They did that to
Swift Current.
No, Moose Jaw when we were playing, and then they said Moose Jaw guys were like, well, they're going to do it when we get to Saskatoon. And we'd already had a little bit of fun and some warm-ups with Medicine Hat, so the PA guys who were a tough crew, Rod Dahlman and Dean Bram and Bomber and of course, Davey Manson were tough. So we had the crew of the Clarks and the Koshers and Killer and everybody at Twister. So we made sure that wasn't going to happen, and that's when they started handing out those separate warm-ups, about a couple incidences of us trying to make sure nothing was going to happen in these warm-ups, and it turned into, okay, well, you guys, they were so spread out, it seemed like you were warming up at 4 o'clock for a 7, oh, yeah, you guys warm up at 4, and this is ridiculous.
Yeah, it got a little goofy.
Yeah, that was crazy.
That's incredible. Wow.
You know, I had the good fortune of being Killer's roommate for a while. And
that's right. You guys lived both together.
Yeah, we lived with Jim and Joanne. And I'll tell you, Killer, you got the great nickname. And when you put skates on, maybe a better place for you is jail, But everybody that knows you, and I mean really knows you, is just blown away with the fact that, you've got that other personality that you flip into when you put skates on, because I mean, there's the rink now in Churchbridge, right? It's named the Kaminsky Arena.
Correct. Right?
That doesn't happen because you're just a tough guy. It happens because you're a beauty. Right. And I got one little story about, I mean, other than the fact that anytime you borrowed my truck, it came back full of gas and washed, even if you just went to the corner store for a Slurpee. So that was pretty cool. But, remember the one story there, and like you and I, we were never really A students. Remember that? Back in the high school days, right?
You were never A student.
And one day you came back and you said, I got to go down and study. Right after school, you just went right downstairs to study. And I'm like, odd, but good for you. And we're sitting around, I guess I'm watching TV, and all of a sudden it's supper time. Joanne says, hey, where's Killer? So I yell at him and no answer. So I make my way down to his room. The door is cracked a little bit and I can see the books are just thrown on the bed and they're not open, so I don't think he's been doing any studying. And I don't really want to go in his room because you don't want to go in a teenage boy's room in the, you know, without asking. So I just kind of peek in the door and I can hear the vacuum going. Remember that day?
Uh-huh.
And he was just finishing up in the closet. And he, Jim and Joanne had the carpet back then that if you vacuumed it one way, it was dark, and then you vacuumed it the other way, it was light. He was just finishing in the closet. He had his shoes pulled out of the closet, and he was just finishing the last couple light dark strips about an inch long, and the whole room was done that way. And I just had to shake my head. It was one of those, oh my God.
Little OCD.
Yeah, it was awesome. But you know what? Your horrifying nickname and all the things that, you know, people remember you by, it's a little bit, you know, as far as a personality goes, you're a beauty. And I think,
completely,
you know, everybody knows that.
Misleading.
Yeah, yeah, it sure is. Yeah. Chaser, you, on the other hand, you're kind of, you know, dickhead on the ice, dickhead off the ice, kind of the same thing, right?
Yeah, I can be an asshole all the time. Don't worry.
Hey, Kelly, be remiss here. It was a couple years ago, went down to your the premiere of your documentary on Tough Guys and Guardians, and it was awesome. And I have to say that I've seen it a few times since, and two of the lines I love the best out of the whole thing, where Brett Hall, Brett Hall says, you know, Brett Hall wouldn't be Brett Hall without Kelly Chase and Tony Twist. And I thought that was one of those lines where you've got somebody who, you know, a Hall of Fame is basically looking back and saying, I wouldn't be anywhere without those two guys, because his life was probably a lot easier. But I think the line that got me, and you can maybe talk about this if you want, but the line that got me at the end when they asked you if you'd do anything different, and you you got a little emotional and you said you'd play with a little more fire. And I thought, man, that is awesome. Because that just comes to the forefront of the kind of player that, you know, you were and a lot of guys in that era were. And just maybe talk about that a little bit and how that came about, and you know,
the
just
relationship
kind of
there.
Yeah, the relationship with it. It was such a good movie.
Well, Adam Scorgi did the documentary, and I said he kept asking me to be a part of helping him make this documentary. And I was always to the impression that it was more of, hey, I want to use your Rolodex. And I really avoided it. I said, listen, you know, because nobody really properly, in my opinion, told the story. And so what I wanted to do was, I said, if you give me some kind of, you know, some responsibility in it, I said, I'll get my guys to do this. But I want you to know that if I do that, I get to say some of the guys that can and can't be on. And so at the end of the movie, the crybaby there at the end of the movie was me. I actually saw the end of that thing four times in four different takes and said, take that out of the movie. Or, you know, you guys aren't getting, it's just in there for now, they kept saying. And they kept...
Yeah.
Brett and Adam kept saying, well, this is for sure the ending. Like, we already know this is the ending. Like, they had that program for them. So for me, I just wanted to be able to tell the story that was misled. And I think at the premiere at the Toronto Film Festival, one of my friends, who she's been a friend of mine since we were kids, little kids, she came to the premiere with my sister, my kids, my wife, some of my family, and the thing that made it great, we did Ice Guardians, you know, you wanted to paint a picture and be objective from both sides, but give somebody something to think about the role. And I think we walked out of the theater, and she was crying, and I said, what's the matter? And she said, I'm so sorry. And I said, what the hell are you sorry about? She said, I'd never protected you. And I said, what are you talking about? She goes, I hated that you fought, and I thought it was ridiculous, and I never understood why you guys did it. And I never understood that there was kind of a different purpose to it. And I said, well, you're the perfect person to watch it, because you're the people that I want to understand that, because
I never fought for anybody's entertainment. I always felt like I was fighting because there was a purpose, and it was about competitiveness and about stopping guys from bullying other guys on the other team, you know, our team, and having our team feel comfortable. And I think, you know, we played together. I think, you know, you can attest that our team didn't go anywhere and not feel comfortable. We were pretty comfortable whether we were on the ice or in the bar. We were comfortable.
Yeah. No, but I think the thing that sets you guys apart is, you know, Killer, Chaser, and even some of the, like, Twister and some of the boys, you get into the game, and for whatever reason, there's a time where it needed to happen. You guys could just flick the switch, and, you know, you have a mutual respect with even some of the guys that you're fighting. It's just like, okay, it's time to go. We need to liven this up. We need to pick things up. We need to do something to motivate the boys, whatever it is. I could never do that. I mean, I'm not going to say I didn't enjoy fighting every once in a while, but it was always because there was a major reason in my mind. It was always, and I think that's the difference between guys that are tough and guys that, like yourselves, who are tough, but, you know, you did it for a living. And I always respected that. I just thought there's something a little different, you know. I'm not just joking either. It's something that, you know, an enforcer. I mean, the shows like you had, and there's been others out there that are just, I think, really, really good, and it's for people, just like you said, that don't really understand it. Now they kind of see that there's a purpose for it. It's not just a bunch of guys going around beating over the head, you know, with hockey sticks. It's, you know, there's reasons for it.
There's the same thing, you know, in ball, okay? I mean, whether you're pitching inside and, you know, or what, if you just want to, I mean, people don't like to hear this, but intimidation is still a part of sports. I mean, the St. Louis Blues won the Stanley Cup final last year, and they won it because they bullied everybody. And they literally did. And to go into Boston and think that you were going to run over the Bruins every day in Boston, I mean, it just happened, and that's what happened. And they were tougher than everybody else, and they played harder than everybody else, and that's why they won the Cup. And yet, it's the same thing in ball. And I think when we get competitive, we find ways to push those buttons, push each other, and that's what we did. We pushed, I mean, at practice in hockey, at practice in ball, we pushed each other, and not by intimidating each other, but making each other better and work harder and be mentally tougher. And I think now there's a loss at that. I think Kevin's he's the coach of the year in the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League, and he will tell you there's a certain way you have to coach now, where you got to rub someone's ass, and you got to pat them on the back, and you got to talk nice, and you got to be. Whereas, you know, we pushed each other by being the opposite of that, and I think I'm grateful for it, because the success I've had in my life are because I had guys like you guys pushing me. And I'm grateful for that. So, like, I don't know how it's going to be looked upon 30, 40 years from now, but for me, I'm glad I had those guys pushing my buttons.
Well, yeah, and Killer, I mean, I'll ask you about this too, because, yeah, you're back in the SJ, and I think the SJ is better for it. It's awesome having a Saskatchewan coach back. I'm sad I retired from refereeing 3 years too early, because I think we could have had some pretty cool exchanges. I worked that league for 20 years where, you know, the first few years it was, you know, any slash below the elbow was okay. And then it went from taking out the stick work to trying to fight rule to now essentially there's really no fighting. And I remember in the last tail end of working that league, I don't know how many times in a game I would say to a goaltender or to a linesman or somebody that was in earshot saying, we need to fight right now. Like, it just got to the point where there was just, you know, there was so much other crap going on and lots of yapping and stuff. And, right. You know, I just, if they would have had a couple fights to straighten things out. And I mean, and Kelly, I mean, you played in that league as well. And, you know, back in the day with 2 minutes to go and a 3-goal spread, it took a half an hour to play it, right? Not saying it has to go back to that, but definitely there's no tone setting, there's no, you know, there's a lot of kumbaya going on, and I think the game has changed a lot, and it's the same way in softball too. But Kev, I'll turn it over to you and say, you know, like, the changes you've seen in the game, and you know, kudos to you, Coach of the Year, and because, I mean, that, I think awesome. Coaching junior hockey right now is probably one of the toughest jobs going, for a guy like you, especially because you motivate it differently as a player. So how do you motivate these guys you know, without losing it.
Yeah, you know what? It was. Well, you know what? First of all, I want to say that with the rink up in the Ronde, it's a little smaller than the average 200 by five, right?
Yep. So
I wanted a team, and just as Chaser was saying, that intimidation factor is still there. So I wanted a team that, you know, plays hard, plays with grease and grit, and freaking finishes their checks, punishes their D, and their D don't want to go in the back to get the puck in the corners in the third period, and then you just take over. And I thought, we had a tough team. Like, we had guys who could play and fight, and no one wanted to play us. I mean, we had this kid, Spencer Kennedy, 6'4", and he freaking knocked out a few guys. But again, with him, like, he was always, you know, today it's all these mind games, right? Like, F you and all this shit, and no one's going to fight. And so you kind of got him to get him to. So, like, the last month, I finally got him to just calm down and play the game. And then, you know, the last month and in playoffs, he was our leading scorer on the team just because he, you know, I just said, if you start scoring, you know what? They might come after you. Then you can fight. You know,
right?
Yeah,
they're going to give him a little more time.
Is there anybody else that feels some humor in this? What you're hearing right now?
Well, yeah, that's what I told.
Just imagine if you could get this guy that's your best player, that's your toughest guy to just play hockey. Just imagine that.
Wow.
You know, can you imagine that? Like,
I don't
know.
The guy
led our team in score. The guy talking to the guy that led our team in scoring and had 13 suspensions. 13
wow.
games.
I know.
One year.
Well,
the Kaminsky meter. Do you remember that one?
Meter, yeah.
So I guess you're coachable, killer, because that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and that's what I told Spencer. I go, I'm telling you from firsthand, man. I go, yeah. I wish I would have listened. You know, and you know what? And being up in California in Fresno, I got to see Jack Bocas, and you know, rest in peace, Boke. But I would go visit him, and he would have his Cali camp. I would go scout, right? And I'd stay at his place, and he said, killer, he said, you know what? He said, if you would have just played half the games that you know, instead of worrying about the other shit, he said, our line, he said, you would have had just as many points as Sakic would have had.
The old KKK line, yeah.
You know, and then I'm like, you know, I mean, today I wish I would have looked back and, you know, I guess maybe pulled it half back and whatever and played the game a little bit more. But, you know, when I look at it, right? So now I had very good numbers, you know, point a game in the American League and that stuff. So now you're going to go up to the NHL with Washington, and now are you going to be a top six? No, you're not, you know. So I accepted my role, and obviously I think just as Chaser, same thing. Like, obviously you played a lot more years than I did, but when I got that opportunity, you know, I made sure I stayed there for, you know, close to 4 years and made the best of it. Because, you know what, if I would have tried to get the points, who knows, I probably would have been sent down to the minors a long time ago, you know?
My brother
made a great point to me one time, and I stopped kind of bothering him about it, but he was a good player, and I felt like he was cheating himself by not being more competitive or working harder in the off season and stuff. And he said to me, you know, if everybody wanted to play as bad as you wanted to play, you wouldn't have made it. You weren't good enough. And he's right. Mm-hmm. If everybody wanted to play as bad as I wanted to play, there was much more skill out there than I had. And there was much more. So whatever it was that drives you to get to that point where you can be successful, then, you know, that, and like Killer said, you know, I mean, like, I remember you talked about 91 and all the penalty minutes we had and everything. We played each other in the finals, and his line was the best line that they had. I mean, we played against them, and I had to play against them every shift, and I knew what was coming, and I would tell Nelson Emerson was just leery of Killer, and he just said to me, he says, like, I said, don't worry, I'm not going to let him do anything to you, but I go, you can't skate around out there thinking for 1 second that he's not going to try and hurt you to win, because he will. And then, you know, I mean, it, it's too late for me to deal with it then, but you got to be aware of that. And it was the competitiveness that made him, you know, that makes you have success. And it doesn't matter what the hell you're doing. You guys all know that if you want to win bad enough and you've got a group of guys that'll push you, you can have a lot of success at a lot of different things. And I think that's the difference. I think now we're so worried about possibly hurting some feelings or being, you know, in a situation as a coach or as another player where we're going to be criticized for being honest, that we allow guys to be off the hook. And you know, I can tell you, I mean, I have three boys, and one of them's playing in Saskatchewan, one of them's playing in Melfort. And I say all the time, I mean, don't look for me for sympathy, because you know what, boys, if you want to be successful in it, dig in and be a good teammate and just work hard, and it'll work out.
So I want to bring up
that's my thought.
I want to bring up, so you guys, obviously the theme of that is, you know, in policing the game within the game with the players doing it, right? So there's a bit of a, you know, Dean and Tosh, in the men's game, things get out of hand. You know, there's kind of an unwritten set of rules where there might be an inside pitch or somebody might accidentally get one on the body. And that's gone away, obviously. But it's led to this culture of, you know, there's no more rules that way. And so obviously us old guys still play that way and it's understood. But when you play a younger team, they don't get it. And they don't get that, hey, you don't need to run away with it. You don't need to take extra bases. You don't need to do that kind of stuff. And then the NHL, it's the same now. It's become a skill game, and I get it. But how is that as a team of ball players that was the toughest group ever, was it the same philosophy playing ball as it was playing hockey? What was the transition like between sports?
Well, for
a killer hit now.
Well, I don't know, like this, like kind of what Chaser said, like I hated to lose at anything, you know, like in any sport I played, like, I mean, whether it was badminton or volleyball or baseball or, you know, softball or hockey, well, whatever it was, man, I'm going to do whatever it takes to win, you know, and it's just like when you put the skates on, right, you become a different breed. But I think, like you said, you have that, I call it the care factor. You know, you have that care factor inside you that, you know, just as Chaser said, like, yeah, we didn't have the skill or as the other guys, but we had that other, whatever, tenacity or determination, whatever word you want to use. And I like I said, the care factor, it was so ingrained in me that, I want to get better every day. I want to, you know, I just want to be the best. And you do whatever it takes, whether in practice, whether in a game. I don't know. It was just installed in me, I think, from the day I was born, you know?
Well, and you, I mean, you guys have both brought that up, Chaser, with your teammates and, you know, wherever you've played in the NHL, it doesn't matter where. And Killer, now you're at the point where you're coaching kids. That's what they see. Like, we can teach them and you know, teach them skills and do whatever we want. I know that that's important, but I guarantee you that your Chaser, your teammates fed off you, and that's what made the team roll and Killer. Now, even now into the role of coaching, your players see something that is something different, right? And it's like, they don't even know what it is, but they want it, right? And I think that's the gift of really, you know, good coaches and teammates that, because I think back to a kid and I'm like, I never had a philosophy. You know, we're thinking back now and we're going, well, I think this is kind of what I was thinking. But you know what, for me, just personally, I just did what I thought I needed to do. Right. You know, there wasn't, you
yeah,
know, now we
I,
think back
I think
and we can
I think
put,
we,
yeah,
we had Daryl Lubinicki as our GM, okay? And Luby, as we all, we giggle about Luby, and he was an interesting guy, but I'll tell you, I love him. I love the fact that he liked the underdog. I love the fact that he believed in us. And I think that sometimes it takes, and I can remember, you know, we all have a story about Luby giving it to us, you know. I remember him coming in the locker room and telling us that, you know, that we don't want to win bad enough. I think we had a little bit of a problem in Regina, and that's when he asked Danny Logan, our buddy Danny Logan, where he wanted to play. And they were just, here's Hook taking Dan Logan's equipment. he's taking it out of the, Logan's unpacking it out of the bag and hanging it up, and Hook's putting it in a shopping cart at the same time, our trainer. And he says, Danny, where would you like to play hockey? Because you're never going to wear a Blades uniform again. So where would you like to play? Like right in front of all of us.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, I mean, it was, and I mean, if you did that now, you'd go to jail.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
and then he says, the problem with you guys is you don't want to win. I want to win. You give me 20 Kevin Kaminskys and Wendell Clarks, and I'll beat you at anything. Ping pong, racquetball, you tell, because they want to win. He goes, yeah. I go fishing with my daughter. She catches the first fish. I cut her frickin' line. Because I want to catch the first fish. You know? And, like, we used to laugh about it, but at the end of the day, he really did. Like, that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to win. And he was teaching us that, I mean, you know, running the riverbanks in 40 below weather and then going out and skating and then running the riverbanks again. And we did it, what? And, what did we do it? 6 days in a row?
Yeah, but then one was...
And he told, he told us to pack a lunch. Pack a lunch because you guys are going to do it every day until we have another game. And if you lose, we'll be back on these rivers. Like if you did that today, there'd be some sort of a hazing article in the Star Phoenix or something.
Can't imagine. Can't imagine that doing that. Yeah, it'd be just crazy. So if we transition that back, and I'll ask both you guys this question. You know, because you know Dino and I have made a very monumental shift, if you will. In our coaching, because now obviously you know the guys' game in Canada and Saskatchewan was kind of fading, and most of the kids in our 222s program are girls. So not only are we you know fighting against what we have done skill wise, because guys do things a lot differently than girls. So we've had to become a lot more technical as coaches, just the strength factor alone. But it's that will to win. It's that. Go out there and give it all you got, and I run through a wall, and I'll be honest, I won't name any names, but we've had a handful of kids in our program that fit that bill, and every one of those kids have gone on to school, and they've you know really done well. I guess the thing is how, from your side, and it might be all new because it is the female side, but how do we start to instill that stuff in our kids? You know, we try and do it by example every day and having fun with it, but it's tough. So, you know, we'll get some advice from two of the toughest guys that ever played the game. How would you coach girls, fellas?
Wow.
Well, I'd call you. No, you know, I don't really know the answer to how that is, and I even find it difficult. Sometimes when I was coaching the boys in hockey, and I used to say that I called all the parents in, and I just said, I just want you to know how I work. If you come and you complain constantly, because I'm going to make sure everyone's playing, and we're going to get to the end of the year, and we're going to try and win at the end of the year, and this is how it's going to go. But if you're constantly complaining, no sweat, I'm going to put your kid on another team. And I said, because that's, I want to make sure, you know, when I've called timeout in games and I've made the kids do stops and starts and push-ups, I said, hey, boys, you know, ice is $295 an hour, so your parents are going to get their money's worth one way or the other. And, you know, and the parents, after a while, they look at you like you're, but I would have them walk in the rink. I would have them take their gloves off to shake hands. I would have them hold doors for people when they were going in and out of the rink. And I think, I used to have this saying with them, is act like you've been out of the house before. And then I think all of those little responsibilities can carry over to the ice. So if me, just with the kids, I took the parents and I said, listen, here's the deal. Because, you know how we were when we grew up with, if you lay on the ice, it just drives me absolutely batshit crazy when kids would be whining and would stop the play and they wouldn't come. So I would say to them, you know what we're going to do here, boys? Call the parents in. I said, listen, I don't want to take the chance that your kid is seriously hurt. So when he lays on that ice and can't get back to the bench, he's done for the rest of the game. And you want to see kids crawl to the bench, boys? The first time little Johnny lays out on the ice and you sit him for the rest of the game, you said, remember the meeting we had? Sorry, Johnny, I don't care how good you are. This isn't going to work. You don't ever see kids laying on the ice anymore. And it's just something that you can teach them without browbeating them. But it also, it comes mostly from the parents, because elephants don't raise giraffes. So if you got 15 guys out there, the parents that are going to be in your kitchen all the time, then you might as well just send them to another team and cut the cancer right now.
That's an interesting.
So
I really wish that Tosh would have had maybe a coach like that back in his hockey days, because Tosh, we'd be probably still living off your pension. Like, you and Chaser would have been probably teammates forever. Tosh could skate, man. He could fly.
I remember playing against him.
Yeah, but as soon as the puck would go in the corner, he was like, where are you? He's gone.
Nice
but
guy.
That being said, you did start that brawl against Humboldt.
I might have.
It was your fault. You started it, and then all heck broke loose, and Killer's fighting four people and ends up going to the hospital.
Right.
Your fault.
Sorry, bud.
Interesting. I wanted to bring up a quote. Kevin, you mentioned how much you'd do anything to win, which there's a movie that I love. It's called Moneyball. It's about the Oakland A's, who I also love. But Brad Pitt's playing Billy Bean, and he's talking to his players, and he says, I hate losing. I hate losing so much I more than I love winning, which is an interesting philosophy that, you know, we always focus on the, you know, you got to win, but you have to hate to lose to want to love to win. And so you talk about, you know, Kevin, you had 99 points in your last year in the WHL. That's a ton of points. And then you found that to make it to the next level, you had to adapt to a different role. And one of the things I wanted to kind of bring up with the segue here, if I can get there, with the twos program, we get all these athletes that come in and they're the best player from wherever they are, wherever they're from. But to play on this team, you maybe have to take a different role, play a different position, lower in the lineup. And there's some athletes get it right away, and some, they really struggle with that transition. So, I mean, kudos to you. You found a way to get in there, and you had a hell of a career, and now you're coaching. But that's one of the struggles, I think, that we all deal with when you start to coach is, you know, you have a small group, you make it a big group, and now you've got all this different talent to overlook. How did you adjust to your role?
Well, I, you know what, this is, and I'll kind of talk, so just a little bit about this year, right? So the last 3 years in LaRonge, right, they, I think he had 28 wins, right? And so we start the season 0-5. And, you know, I can hear the rumblings a little bit, and I'm like, I told the boys, I go, look, man, we're right there. I go, we could be 4-1. I said, all we got to do now is just a little bit extra, be a little bit better on the walls, net fronts, you know, just, again, let's block a couple more shots. Let's take hits to make the plays, and then we'll be fine. And then I tell you what, once they got that taste of winning, which was next game, I mean, we only lost 14 more games the rest of the season. And that's what you kind of want to do is you want to get that team to buy in and get everyone on that same page. And I had my leading goal scorer from Fresno, California, Dalen Manon, and I called him and we were going good. I go, Dalen, things are going good. I go, you know, you're leading the team in scoring. I go, look at, but I just need a little extra more. I said, all I want from you is to show your teammates, because you're a leading scorer. I said, I want two block shots a game and one more hit. And I tell you what, that's contagious. And I'll tell you what, we're going to really take off. And he did it. You know, so if you can get your leading scorer to go down and block two more shots a game and get an extra hit, and I said, you don't have to hit all the time. I go, that's not your game. But if you can hit one more extra time, and everyone's going to buy in and really get contagious. And that's how we were successful. I mean, you know, and as far as my career, I mean, like I said, I felt I could do both, right? I mean, I know I could put the points up. I love to score. But there was that other side of me that I loved probably a little too much, was just to go for the big hit and fight the biggest guy there was, right? Mm-hmm. So like I said, when, you know, very successful, like I said, you know, you had all the penalty minutes, 300 minutes in the minors, and you had your, whatever, 65 points in 70 games in the American League. And but then when you get to the NHL, you know, like you said, you know, you've kind of got to, you don't get the ice time like you used to. So now you got to make things happen. Like, and in Washington, we always had close games. So I only get a couple shifts a period. So I got to make things happen then and there. because I don't know, third period, if it's a one-goal game, I probably ain't going to be playing, you know. And so it's it was a fine line, but I felt like I said I could do both sides of that, and I was fortunate enough where obviously the coaching staff loved me in Washington, and I looked for those big hits, and I fought whoever. I mean, I remember, and I was just telling this story, we were playing Florida Panthers, and we were down 4-1 going in the third. And I fought Paul Loss, who's one, you know, who was a very tough customer. And it was a great tilt. And we came back and won 5-4 in overtime. But it was just that, again, about what are you fighting for? Well, it was about changing the momentum, trying to get your teammates going. And they responded, right? And I remember we stayed overnight that night, and I remember in the morning reading the paper, Pat Peake said, well, because I think Pat Peake had the game-winning goal, he said, well, I didn't win this game. Kevin Kaminsky won this game for us. You know, so that's kind of that mentality that we had back then, where that mentality today is kind of gone, you know? It's there, but it's gone.
So I wanted to ask you both, going back to this documentary on TSN, you know, you had all these guys, you had you two, you had Koshers, you had Wendell Clark, you had Melrose, you had Yanni, and then there was as you all advanced to the pros, there was a kind of an unwritten rule that no one from Kelvington area fought anyone from Kelvington. So you didn't fight each other, but I'll start with you, Kevin. Is there someone that you had, you know, that would be your Tyson and Holyfield, would be the guy that you always had good tilts with? It was a memorable thing. Is there one guy that sticks out in your mind?
No, because I like to fight anybody, you know.
You can't remember. You can't remember. That's why.
I remember telling Boak, remember when the Pats in Seattle made like a 5-for-5 trade?
Yeah, Greg Endine.
And I remember telling Boak, I go, hey, Boak, did you hear about the big trade, the 5-for-5 with Pats in Seattle? He goes, no, I didn't. And I told him, and I said, well, I got five new guys to fight now, because I don't think I made that trip to the coast, so I had to do five guys to fight.
Gosh,
Kelly, is there anyone for you that jumps out right away?
Stu Grimson and I used to go at it in the minors quite a bit, and it was more the teams than it was the guys. Like if we were playing against Medicine Hat or Prince Albert, we were going to have, you know, it was going to be a tough game, and they were tough guys, and they weren't going to give an inch, and we certainly weren't. And then when they got to the NHL, it was, Chicago and it was Detroit. I mean, we played Chicago and Detroit. It was just kind of Chicago Stadium. You could just mark it on the calendar of a 4-hour game. I mean, there was just no way around it. It was unavoidable. And you do everything from, you can Google the St. Patrick's Day massacre in hockey to whatever, you know, to every other tilt that we have in there. And it was always Chicago and us brawling, or Detroit and us brawling, Cujo and I remember Kim Cheveldae, who was one of our good friends. I started a little action in St. Louis one night, and Chevy was in goal, and Probert was coming towards me after the fight, because it was going to be Probert night. Jim Cummings come flying in there for Bob Probert. Well, I have no idea to this day why he did that, but anyway, Probert and I get into it, or Jimmy and I get into it, and Jimmy doesn't do great, and so he kind of gets third in that one, and so now it's me and Probert's coming over towards me, and Pat DiPuzzo's linesman, and I said, hey, cuz, be careful, cuz, here comes the big boy. And he looks over his shoulder. I said, let go of my arms. Let go. And he let go of my arm. And as soon as Proby got close to me, I took a swing at him. And so all this shit started. Well, Jimmy Cummings was already in the penalty box. So we had one more guy out on the ice. So Chevy come flying out of the net. And Cujo got him. And I mean, Cujo whips him with about four right in the eye. And I'm going off the ice, and Cujo and Chev's now back in the net trying to get his gear back on after the brawl. They get me out of the penalty box. I'm getting kicked out of the game. And I look over at him. I'm telling you, boys, his eyes swollen shut. Okay, he couldn't finish the game. Cujo's beat the hell out of him, right? And I looked at him, I said, Jesus, what a freaking embarrassment to the Saskatoon Blades alumni. Did a college goalie beat the hell out of you? And he was swearing at me and cursing me. And, I mean, we were, and I was just chuckling to myself knowing full well, when we went back to, you know, back to Detroit, I was going to have Probert because he wasn't sleeping until he got that all squared away.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but it was a lot of fun.
Did either of you guys in your travels tune Reed Simpson in for me?
Well, Simmer and I fought, he's
a Facebook buddy.
Simmer and I fought after you fought him that night. I
mean, yeah.
Simmer and I fought that game.
Did you see that one floating around Facebook? So that was my very first fight because I was still wearing number 6. And I remember and Reed had, you know, he'd had a year or two on me. And so he comes in and I kind of held my own. I think I hung on and threw a couple rights and lefts. And I don't think, I didn't have your fighting school yet, Chaser, at that point. But then right at the end, the referees have us apart. And I'm sticking my nose out, basically kind of, I don't know, I might have told him I really like him a lot. And then he bopped me right in the beak and I lost my balance and I fell on my rump. And it looked awful. And then, when that floated around, I actually sent it to Reed and I said, cheap shot artist, right? And then he sends back, keep your head up, man. Like, I can't teach you that, you know? So, pretty funny. But the only time I did fight him, I ended up fighting him again when I went to Baltimore. And I'm like, remember I said I always need something to motivate me to fight. Like, I just needed something. And I remember being in Washington, and I had to do something to just show up, right? I mean, I had a decent camp. I was happy with how things were going, but I think they needed to see something a little extra. So Reed Simpson's out there, and he's from PA, you know. So I knew Reed, and he hops out on the ice. And, right before that, I hit Rocky Trache at center ice, and his gloves and stick went flying, and he's down. And then Reed Simpson comes out, and he goes, hey, Dino, you know why I'm here, right? And kind of gives me that one. I'm like, well, this is what I got to do, right? So, again, I'm not mad at Reed Simpson, but he's out there to do a job. He hit me about 18 times flush in the face, and I got to thank him because I think he might have had pillows tied to his fingers because I thought for sure that I was going to be leaking. Like, I thought, and I actually kind of wrestled, and I think I fell on top of him, and the crowd cheered like I might have actually won the fight, but there's not a chance, right? He hit me everywhere you could possibly hit a guy in the face, and I went to the, as I'm on top of him, I'm like, waiting for blood to drip, nothing drips. So I get to the penalty box and I'm doing the, you know, the fake, just kind of like wipe and sweat kind of thing, checking my hands, seeing for blood. There was not one mark, not one scratch. So I'm glad it wasn't Joey that hit me that many times, but I got to thank Reed for whatever reason. He must have hit me just perfect that it didn't leave any marks. But I was hoping maybe one of you guys might have tuned him up at some point down
the road. He was a tough customer.
He was, yeah. But
sure
I mean, was.
I remember Twister, and I remember Reed. Reed was, full of ambition, and he went after Twister, and he didn't fare so well. And I remember him saying, like, after going, holy man, he's a load, you know. And I said, everyone respects the fact that you went after him, and I got to be honest with you, no one in the rink expected you to win either.
Yeah,
I mean, because we guys just didn't. And when we saw him lose those fights to Link Gates, we were like, and you know, I'm going to tell you something about Twister.
Man.
Not only was he lost those fights to Link Gates, and then he came to the locker room and he was so pissed at Kerry Clark because Sharky went after Link and did pretty well. And, you know, so then they went at it at practice. And then that's when they lived together. So then, you know, then the pizza came that night and they were ringing the doorbell. The Billets had left money for the pizza and told them that they were going out. So they just left money for them. And Shark just kept laying on the couch and saying, go get the pizza, loser buys. By the time the door came open at that place, like, this pizza kid didn't know what the hell was going on. They were both, the dust was just flying again in that house. And I had to laugh when he tells the story because you could just see the two of them are stubborn, you know. And I mean, And then Twister gets to the minors, and Link Gates beat the living hell out of him.
Again?
Gave me a beating. He gave me a beating.
Oh, you. Oh,
and I said, I've only been cut in a fight twice in my life, and I got cut. And I said, I'm in the locker room. I'm like, oh, I mean, when you finish holding on to one guy's skate laces, you got third, boy. I'll tell you that for free. And so he's given me a beating, right? So now I'm going to go back out on the ice and fight him. And Twister comes in the locker room because we played in the minors and played in the NHL together. I said, buddy, I got to go fight him again. He goes, I got him. I go, no, that's my fight. Don't embarrass me. Just let me. Now, this is just a rerun of what happened the year before in Saskatoon. Dude. And I said, no, I got to go get him. Actually, it was 2 years before because it was my second year pro. And I went when I was just coming out back from getting these stitches, Twister was now, Link was now out of the penalty box playing, and Twister was fighting him, and Twister knocked Link out cold.
Yeah.
So now not only am I embarrassed that I have lost the fight, now Big Brother's come and beat the hell out of the guy for me. I was so pissed. And so I knew how Twister felt after doing it, right? And the next day I got called to the NHL. I had black eyes. I had a fat lip and a cut over my forehead. And Mario Marois says to Brett Hull while we're stretching, he says, hey, Ali, is this the tough guy you tell me about? Because he don't look so good to me. And the boys had a real tilt laughing at the French guy was talking about how bad I was beat up. I was like, what a start I got here in St. Louis. First game in the NHL, I can't see. Perfect.
Oh, gosh.
Hey, Chaser, at least I think why Twister beat him so bad, he loosened Link's skates.
with my well, kid.
Couldn't handle his balance.
Okay, boys.
That's a good teammate.
We talked a bit offline. There's one quote I want to finish with on that documentary. More penalty minutes per square mile from that group in Kelvington area than anywhere else on the planet, which is impressive. I mean, everyone grew up pretty hard there and tough, and you played both sports. It's been awesome talking to you both. We have a bit of a segment here at the end of every podcast. We call it Parting Shots. And it just sort of took off. So we go through one by one and kind of say, here's your last chance to say something. What do you want to leave our listeners with? So I want to start with you, Chaser, and then we'll go to Kevin, and we'll go then around the horn. But go ahead and let us know a little bit about what you want to say as a parting shot for us.
Well, I mean, I didn't really know how we were going to be on the air. A couple guys from Saskatchewan, one of them I played with, that's not exactly a public speaker. Now he's got himself a podcast. This just goes to show you that anybody can have a podcast.
Oh, God.
It's just that easy, yeah?
Yeah. And then I got my buddy who, I know is way more important in my family than me, Kevin Kaminsky. My mother likes him more than me, so I can't even give him a shot. So I appreciate how well this has gone over already. I'm still at the bottom of the ladder.
Oh, gosh.
Kevin, how about you?
Oh, gosh. I really don't really have any partying shots. Like I said, I freaking... I don't. I care too much about anybody that's been a teammate of mine. So I really don't have any parting shots. But if you're on the other team, then look out.
let me be clear. I don't mean you got to take a shot at somebody and tell them that they're terrible. I just want it's your last chance to say like, here, thanks for having me, or whatever you want to say. You don't have to rip anybody. We do that with each other all the time. So feel free.
I'll give you an example. So Chaser, you were our big toe back in the day. That was actually one of your nicknames, right? One of the things I get a lot of mileage out of the stories of, you know, you actually taught me how to fight, you know, and it's those things at the end of practice. And I always thought it was pretty valuable, but I just remember a couple of the first times when I, you know, typically you go to square off with somebody, you throw your left arm out, you go to grab onto their power arm, right? Their right arm. Well, you would grab my weak arm and spin me around and I thought, my arms would be tied in a bowl and I couldn't even, you know, throw a punch. And so that's why I really appreciate it. But one of the things that you actually said, and I remember it to this day, is there's no need to get hit.
No,
like,
I couldn't.
I'm like, what? So I just could never get that. I mean, but you,
is that what you're supposed to do?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, Taylor. So it's coming here. Here's the question. So I really wish you would have taught Killer a little bit of that, because then instead of getting 99 points that year, he probably would have had 100. He would have been in the 100 club. You know, if you just would have taught him to maybe take a few less stitches, take a few less lumps to the head.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing you got to remember. Now, I firmly believe in that philosophy as a player. Like, I could fight with both hands, but I wasn't big on standing and exchanging with a guy that was 6 foot four or five. But the one thing I'll tell you is Kevin might not have had 60 points if he played soft. So he had the great hands, yes. But guys, I can assure you, they stood back sometimes in the corner and pretended not to see him in front of the net because they wanted to go nowhere near him. So don't kid yourself. A lot of those points were because Killer played the way his nickname was Killer, and he played like a killer, and that's why he had 99 and not 60.
Yeah, that's right. Good point. Okay. Good point.
Tosh, anything from you?
Hey, I just want to thank you guys for coming on, and it's been great talking to you guys about a little bit of softball, lots of nostalgia stuff, and I know our listeners are going to love that stuff, especially the dads. They're going to be chomping at the bit to hear this one. So I just want to thank you guys for taking time out of your busy schedules, and I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned here, talking about your will to win and being good teammates, and I think I know three of the guys on this cast, I would say, that had that in spades. And I mean, I played with Killer, didn't play with you, Kelly. I obviously grew up playing with Dino. And I think that's the biggest thing, where I think heart trumps talent a lot of times. And sometimes I wish that some of these players would get in their head that you can be the most talented player in the world. But if you don't have heart and the will to win, you're not going anywhere. So I appreciate the comments.
Yeah, no,
I appreciate you guys taking your time.
I appreciate it as well. And I was going to say, don't be afraid when you're coaching to not hand out ribbons. Like, I don't know why everybody needs a trophy nowadays. It drives me crazy. And I remember a parent coming in and reaming out the kids. I went in and they had thrown their medals for second place in the garbage. I had gone in the room and I seen all these medals in there. Now, I want to smirk, right? But I can't, because I'm like, I don't blame them. They can leave them in there. It doesn't matter to me. Now, you want to have respect for the tournament. So right. I said to the kids, I said, who threw the medals in there? And they all had thrown them in there. And I said, you guys all throw your medals in there? And they said, yeah. I said, well, make sure the tape's picked up and put on top of them so they don't see them before we leave. And I had a parent calling me, pissed off. I said, hey, listen, your kid's probably going to be okay in life if he just that determined.
Yeah.
Don't worry
about
your kid, and don't worry about his coach. His coach is already done. So, so that it just to me, I'm not a big believer in the, you're not teaching them much if you.
No.
You got to hide. You want to be respectful because they bought them these medals, but if they don't know the difference, who cares? They don't want to lose.
Yeah. Well, the only time I lost to Dino in the final of a national championship, my silver medal is somewhere on the Ontario 401. I'll tell you that right now. she never made her own.
Thanks for listening to Tuesday Talk with Tosh, Dino, and Donnie.